Rashi, towards the beginning of the Sedra, brings down the Chazal. The children were wrestling within her, that whenever she passed by a place of idolatry, Esav wanted to go out. Whenever she passed by a Beis Medrash, Yaakov wanted to go out. That Medrash seems to contradict the basic foundation of Judaism. The basic foundation of the Torah is that people have free choice and can choose between good and bad and are not predestined to be righteous or wicked. And here it seems like in the embryonic stage, Yaakov already was a tzaddik and Esav was a rasha. So when did they have a chance to have free choice? In addition to that, the Gemara says that the Yetzer Hara does not enter a person until birth, not at conception. So why was Esav trying to go out to serve idolatry if he didn't have a Yetzer Hara? The Rambam in Hilchos Tshuva says the following. He says a person should not even entertain the thought that someone is predestined to be a tzaddik or a rasha. But you can be whatever you want. Your own free choice determines it. Nothing pulls you to either side, and that applies to being righteous or wicked or any of the other midos, like being cruel or merciful or stingy or generous. All the midos, right, are determined by your free choice. Nothing decrees, nothing predetermines it, nothing pulls you to either side. Yet the Rambam in Hilchos Deos, same person, same book, just different place, says every person has various character traits. And they're different, one from the other, could be to the extreme. Some people are very merciful, some people are very cruel. Some people are very stingy, some people are very generous. And he says, and there's all different gradations in between. Some people are somewhat cruel and somewhat generous and so on. And he says, where do these character traits come from? He says, some of them are part of your nature, which is part of your nature from the very beginning of your creation. In other words, they are predetermined, predestined, predecreed. Some of them, you have an inclination towards them and are easier to get those character traits than others. Notice you have an inclination towards cruelty or mercy, an inclination towards generosity or being, stingy. Some of them, he says, you learn from other people. And some of them you do on your own. This Rambam seems to contradict the first one. First one says these exact same things. Cruelty, mercy, whatever, you're totally in control and you're the one who determines it. And here, and no one predetermines, nothing pulls you to either side except your own free choice. And here it says the opposite. Now the answer is very simple, and that is there's a very big difference between character traits and qualities and behavior. The second Rambam is talking about character traits, qualities. That's for sure. People are born with specific personalities that are predetermined, predestined. Somebody can be born with a character that he's a cruel person, or he's a merciful person, or he's a generous person. We see little babies are brought home. Some of them are very calm, cool, collected, and some are right away anger at everything. Everything upsets them. And they're little babies. They didn't acquire that with their free choice. Send a kid to Gan. Some kids come home, they gave their shoes to this one, their lunch to that one, and some come home with other people's shoes and other people's lunch. So some are stingy and some are generous. That's not something that they determine with their free choice. That is definitely the case. However, that does not make you righteous or wicked, because character traits are parith. They're not good or bad. It's not good or bad to be merciful or cruel. It depends on the situation. Example, if you're walking down the street going to baseball practice and you have a baseball bat in your hand and your friend is walking with you and you have a inclination to be, by your very nature, to be cruel. You love to pull the wings off of flies and to, you love the sight of blood. And your neighbor your friend has an inclination to be merciful. They faint at the sight of blood. That's their nature. You're both walking to baseball practice with your baseball bats, and a terrorist falls at your feet. And now you have a choice what to do. You can, and the terrorist just killed 200 innocent people and is on his way to kill 200 other innocent people. And he asked you to help him up so he could get on his way. You have two choices. You can take the baseball bat and batter his brains in and make sure he never will kill any more innocent people. Or you can help him up and help him on his way. What would you say is the proper behavior in that situation? Right? Unless you belong to the ACLU, probably the proper proper behavior is batter in his brains. Okay. Now I'm going to have an easy time, or you're going to have an easy time of doing that because you have a natia, you have an inclination to be cruel. And it's easy for you to batter somebody's brains. And now you have an opportunity to do it and do a mitzvah with your cruelty. Your neighbor, who has an inclination to be merciful and is very squeamish, is going to have a hard time to do what's right. You both can choose to do what's right or do what's wrong, right? But you're going to have an easier time because of your inclination. At that point, being cruel is the proper behavior. And on the other hand, if later on you're walking, after you battered this terrorist brains in, you're walking again to your baseball practice, and a little old lady falls at your feet. Now you have two choices too, batter in her brains or help her up. Now the obvious behavior is help her up. So your friend's going to have an easier time because she's merciful. You would like to batter in her brains, but you're going to hold yourself back because not the proper thing to do. So there is no character trait, quality that's good or bad. It's pareth. It depends on the situation, when you should use it and when you should suppress it.
So anger?
What? Anger. There's a time to get angry too. Right? Somebody spits at your parents, curses God, you're supposed to get angry at them. Supposed to use your temper, not lose your temper. It's never proper to lose your temper, but it is proper to use your temper at certain times. And to get angry, it's the things to get angry at. That
in
person
haughtiness.
Should... What?
In haughtiness.
Haughtiness, you should be haughty in being able to serve the Ribbono Shel Olam. Vayigba libo be what's it called? B'dvar Hashem. And be haughty and not be afraid that people make fun of you if you do mitzvahs. That's good haughtiness. Okay. So in any case, so therefore the Rambam, who's talking about character, traits, says that those are predetermined. But nothing pulls you or forces you to use those traits one way or the other. How you use them, if you are a tzaddik or a rasha, is in your hands. Those are the two Rambams. In any case, based on this, I want to say like this, that Yaakov and Esav, from the very inception, were two different children. They were endowed with different characters and different traits. Now, it could be that if they both chose to use their traits properly, they could have both been tzaddikim and both built the Jewish people. And even though it says, Ki bi Yitzchok yikori lechazera, through in Yitzchok, but not all of Yitzchok, that did not invalidate one of these two. Because there's a medrash that says that Yitzchok could have had 12 children, like Yaakov did. It just, circumstances prevented it in the end. But they could have had more children. It could be that both Yaakov and Esav would have been the builders of the Jewish people, like in the next generation, 12 children built the Jewish people. So it could be that Yaakov and Esav would have been two tribes. And I found two different sources that say a similar thing. That both of them say Esav had the character traits of a king. How do I know that? Because there was another person in history who had the same character traits, David HaMelech. So he had the character traits of a king. A king has to be cruel and bold and aggressive and deal with the physical world. And Yaakov, in one source, the Nevi'im, prophets, were supposed to come from Yaakov. Or Kahuna, the Kohanim. Those are different character traits. A Kohen is more passive, more spiritual, less bold, right? Same thing with a Navi, right? Navi is a less aggressive, bold, more involved in the spiritual than the physical. And it was possible, therefore, that both of them should have been tzaddikim, used their qualities in a positive way, and built the Jewish people. In fact, when Rivka was given the nevuah, It was said in such a vague way that it could have been fulfilled in many different possibilities. It didn't. It wasn't ironclad. For instance, it says Shnei goyim v'ditneich u'shnei le'umim mimi'ayach yiparedu. Right, two nations. Now that can be understood to be two separate nations. One's going to be the Jews and one's going to be other nation. But we have the same language later on when Yaakov Avinu was told that he's going to have more nations come from him, and the only one he had was Binyamin coming. And nations over here doesn't mean different nations, it means tribes. And there was a tribe, another tribe that would come, Binyamin, and Yosef would be split into two tribes, Ephraim and Manasseh. So the word Goyim can mean a separate nation, or it can mean a tribe. So when she was told you have two Goyim, could mean two tribes, and they both would build the Jewish people, or two separate nations. One would go on to build the Jewish people, the other would be another nation, like it is, like we know it is Rome. The Romans came from Asa. And then it says, Ula'om mila'om ye'ematz, which sounds to be, one of them will be stronger than the other. Ula'om mila'om ye'ematz, but it can be understood differently. The mem can mean one will be stronger than the other, or each one will be stronger from the other, meaning each one will gain a strength from the other. And that makes sense if they're both two tribes. One is the kings and one is the prophets or the Kohen, so they will have a symbiotic relationship and complement and supplement each other, and each one will gain their strength from the other. So in any case, and then it says, V'rav yavod sa'ir. That has three different meanings that make it completely open-ended. Rav Yavod Sa'ir can mean the older one will serve the younger one. Or V'rav, the older one, Yavod Sa'ir, the younger one will serve him. So it could be the younger one will serve the older one, or the older one will serve the younger one. Or it can mean the younger one will serve a long time. Rav Yavod Sa'ir. Rav meaning a lot. The younger one will work a lot. So it could have been fulfilled in many, many different ways. And therefore, Esav and Yaakov, had they chosen to be tzaddikim, the prophecy could have been interpreted one way. Had they both chosen to be rishayim, then they both would have been not the, the continuation of the Jewish people, and the Jewish people would have come from some other child that Yitzchak had. Had one decided to be a rosh and one a tzaddik, like it did work out, then Yaakov the tzaddik was the continuation of the Jewish people, and Esav was a different nation. So, it was, anything was possible. In any case, so if Yaakov was the Yaakov could be also that who was the younger one, who was the older one. So it's clear that in this world, especially for when it comes to the firstborn, it's determined by birth, whoever comes out first. But the Medrash says, and Rashi brings it down, that when twins are conceived, the first one conceived is the second one born. Because the first one conceived is up higher in the womb, and the second one is lower. So the lower one is born first, but the upper one is conceived first and born second. So when it came to spiritual things, like the avoda, doing the service of the sacrifices, there it could be that Yaakov was the older one, and Esav was the younger, conception-wise. But when it came to the physical things in this world, like a firstborn getting the double portion in the physical world, there the firstborn, right, physically into this world is considered the older. So it could be that Esav really was the younger, and Yaakov was the older from a spiritual sense, whereas Esav was the older and Yaakov the younger from a physical sense. And therefore, could be that Yaakov wanted to buy the rights to do the service because he really was the Bechor for Avodah in those days, right? The Bechoros were the Kohanim. They were the ones who did the sacrifices, and he felt that he was fit for that because he really was the spiritual Bechor, even though Esav was the physical Bechor. So Esav was the physical Bechor, he's going to be the Melech, but Yaakov is going to be the, what's it called, the Navi or the Kohen. And it could be also that if Yaakov had the qualities to be the Navi and Esav the Melech, so who was going to be the Kohen? So the kahuna could go either way. We find that the avoda of the Beis HaMikdash, right, the service in the Beis HaMikdash had a connection to kings and also a connection to prophets. Where so? Who built the Beis HaMikdash? Shlomo HaMelech. So you see that the melech had an idea of building. Who was the one who consecrated and dedicated the idea of sacrifices? Was Nachshon ben Aminadav. He's the one, the first tribe that brought sacrifices in the Mishkan. He's from the melech. Now, Yehuda, the melech. Right? We find also that the Chashmonaim, who were Kohanim, right, also were Malachim, they also were kings. So we find an association between kings and Kahuna. On the other hand, we find an association between Nevi'im and Avoda. Moshe Rabbeinu consecrated the Avoda and the Mishkan. He was a Navi, right? Also, what's it called? It says that the Karbanos bring down a state of prophecy into the world. It's through the Karbanos that the prophets have, And also the Kohen Gadol is a prophet. He has the Urim V'Tumim and he speaks in prophecy. So we find an association of prophets and Kahuna and kings and Kahuna. So it was a toss-up who between these two are going to get the Kahuna. If Esau's going to be the Melech, maybe he's the Kohen. And if Yaakov's going to be the Navi, maybe he's the Kohen. So therefore Yaakov bought the Kahuna from Esau. In any case, so therefore, when it says that the children, whenever Rivka passed by a place of idolatry, Esau wanted to go out, it doesn't say he wanted to go out and serve idolatry. It doesn't say he was a Rasha. It doesn't say what his behavior was going to be. All it's telling us is what his nature was. His nature was to be like a king. The king is involved in the physical things of this world. And therefore, his nature attracts him to the physical side of the world. What's the most physical part of this world where people take spirituality and turn it into physicality by Avodah Zarah? It doesn't say he wanted to go out and serve Avodah Zarah. It says he wanted to go out. Now, it could be that he would go out to destroy the Avodah Zarah, to influence it. It says, they ask, what was Rivka doing, what's it called, in a place of Avodah Zarah? Whenever she passed by a place of idolatry, Esav wanted to go out. What was she doing there? So the Sifsei Kohen says she was there because she wanted to be Makar of these people. She grew up amongst idolaters and she knew how to deal with them. So she went to these places to be Makar of them, to influence them for the good. Maybe Esav wanted to do that. It doesn't say what his behavior would be. It says he was attracted to that kind of place. Same thing with Yaakov. It doesn't say Yaakov wanted to go out and learn Torah. It says he was attracted to spiritual places. He's supposed to be the Navi, the Kohen. So he's attracted to spiritual places. But you can be attracted to spiritual places and not be a tzaddik. You can be attracted to spirituality and sit on the top of a mountain and contemplate your navel and be a guru. You can walk into a Beis Medrash and never learn a word of Torah, drink some coffee, speak Lashon Hara, walk around, just be attracted to the more spiritual places in the world because you're not involved in the physical places. But just being attracted to spirituality doesn't make you a tzaddik. Hold the question until the end. And therefore, it's possible that both of them could have used their natures in a good way, and then they would have complemented and supplemented each other. That's why Rashi says the ideal of what Yaakov and Esav were supposed to be was in history Antoninus and Rebbe. Antoninus was the Roman Caesar, came from Esav, and Rebbe, Rabbi Yehuda Anossi, came from Yaakov. And they both were tzaddikim. Antoninus used his might and power in this world, the Romans, in a positive way, and he supplemented and complemented Rebbe. He was friendly with him, and they both learned Torah together, right? But Antoninus had his character, the more dominant, aggressive king, Caesar, and Yaakov, and Rebbe Yehuda Nasi was the Nasi of the Jewish people, more spiritual. But they worked together. That could have been Yaakov and Esav too. Or, excuse me, as the Sfasemis says, could have been a relationship like Zvulun and Yisachar. Zvulun provides the physical part of the world. He works and supports Yisachar, who learns Torah. Esav would have built up the physical world like a king, and Yaakov would have, what's it called, would have filled that physical world with spirituality as the prophet and the Kohen. And that's why it says that after they were born, nobody took notice of them until they were 13. Now, if they were so different before they were born, how could nobody take notice of them until they were 13 years old? Well, the idea is not that they weren't different, but but to make a difference, because all they were different children. Right? Well, nothing to take notice of. So this one has this character, this has this character. Doesn't make one righteous or wicked. It makes them just different. So nobody took notice. When they were 13, and now they began to make conscious moral choices. Now it wasn't just their nature. Till 13, it was their nature that was making them different. Now is their choices and behavior. Then people took notice. I was thinking, that's the bracha that a father makes when his child becomes bar mitzvah. Baruch Shep Torani Mi'ansho Shavazeh. I was thinking the meaning is the following. Until 13, a child is motivated not by his free choice, because he doesn't really have free choice yet, because he doesn't have full control. He doesn't have full understanding. So what motivates him? What moves him? His nature. Where does he get his nature from? Partially from his parents. From heredity. So the fathers and the mother are to blame for the child's actions, because they're the ones who created his nature. But once a child becomes bar mitzvah, it's not his nature anymore which determines, it's how he uses that nature with conscious free choice. Now it's his fault. Now it's not the parents' fault anymore. They can't be blamed, because whatever nature you have, you can either suppress it or use it when it's necessary. So now the child's on his own. That's what it means. In any case, so now we can understand why Yitzchak wanted to give the bracha to Esav. Because that first bracha was the bracha that's fit for a king, right? The physical things in the world, Tala Shamayim, Mishmane Haaretz, you should be the ruler over your brothers. That's kingship, right? Royalty, right? Monarchy. So who gets that bracha? Esav. Because Yitzchak understood that his son Esav is going to be his king. The kings are going to come from Esav. And Yaakov is going to be the Navi or the Kohen or whatever. And it says in the Medrash Taka that the first bracha was fit for Esav. Esav was supposed to be the king, and he would have gotten that bracha had he chosen to use his qualities properly. And therefore, Yitzchak recognized that Esav was different than Yaakov. And you would think in a negative way, but not so. He says when Yaakov came in impersonating Esav, he slipped up twice and gave Yitzchak the feeling this is not Yaakov. First time, he mentioned God's name. When he was asked, how did you get back so fast? He said, God made it work quickly. So Yitzchak said, I never heard Esav mention God's name. This can't be Esav. Second slip up was, he said, please get up, Father. And Yitzchak said, I never heard Esav say please. So here's a father, he knows his son doesn't say please and thank you, doesn't mention God's name, and he wants to give him the bracha? Yes. Because that is the nature of a king. Those are the qualities of a king. A king is not please and thank you, right? Real Nebuchadnezzar, nice, you know. He's a bold guy. Doesn't necessarily think please and thank you. He's very aggressive. So really to your father, you should say please and thank you. He hasn't yet mastered when and when not. But that's his nature. Same thing. The Mefarshim say this, that Yitzchak said, you know, Esav, because he's the king, and he's practicing now to be that kind of aggressive king, he has to go out in the forest and hunt and conquer the world. So there's a lot of places in the forest that are completely not fit to mention God's name. They're dirty and smelly or whatever. So Esav is very machmir, and he never mentions God's name for fear that he'll mention it in the wrong place. But Yaakov, the Navi, the Kohen...
Was it true, or did he...
What?
Was it true, or...
No. Yitzchak just assumed that that's what it was. He didn't see anything negative about it. He assumed that it must be positive. He had a mitzvah to give him a kafschus, to judge him for the favorably. That was possible.
To
what?
To that extent.
Which it made sense. And he said also that that's why, what's it called, Yaakov mentions God's name, as he's just in a base medrash. Why shouldn't he mention God's name? There's no reason not to. The only problem is, it says that when Esau was 15 years old, he committed three major sins. And Avraham Avinu had to die 5 years early that he shouldn't see Esau going out to Tarbus Roa to go off the derech. What were those three sins? He murdered somebody, he seduced an engaged woman, and he served idolatry. Now those sound like hefty sins. Why didn't Yitzchak see that? And Avraham Avinu had to die 5 years early that he shouldn't see it. It was obviously obvious. Otherwise, why did Avraham have to die? So I wanted to say that here also, it wasn't clear what Esav did. It was clear what he did. It wasn't clear the motives. One of them is clear. The other two, as I admit, is a little contrived, but because one is so clear, you have to say the same thing by the other two. Who did Esav murder that day? Nimrod. Nimrod was the arch Russia, the arch villain of the world. He's the one who tried to kill Avraham Avinu, his grandfather. He's the one who led the whole world into idolatry. If somebody would have killed Hitler in his heyday, would he be considered a murderer or a hero? A hero. So, couldn't you see Yitzchak saying, wow, my little 15-year-old king-to-be, the one the kings are, is already fulfilling his role. What do kings do? Kill tyrants, kill villains. He killed Nimrod, the worst rush in the world. So why did the rabbis consider it a sin? Why did they say he went off the derech?
Because he wasn't a king yet.
Why? What?
Because he wasn't yet a king.
No.
Because after that again, probably.
No. Because if you kill Hitler to rid the world of a villain, you're a tzaddik. But if you kill Hitler because you want his uniform, you're a murderer. And why did Esav kill Nimrod? Because he wanted his special clothing. Not because he wanted to rid the world of a villain. And for that, the motive makes it murder. The same thing goes with seducing an engaged woman. The way the Svarim say, she wasn't married. She was just engaged to be married. I mean, she was still a single woman. Like today, we have engagement. She was engaged to marry an idol worshiper. Couldn't you see Esav saying, look, I know it's not too nice. I'm going to seduce this unmarried woman, and then she'll be my wife or my concubine, and she'll be married to the son of Yitzchak, the grandson of Avraham. I'm going to save her from a life of idolatry. I just want to be Makarifer. Just was Makarifer a little bit too close. Right? Don't you know people? Let's not say people. Don't you know that there is such a phenomenon of people in Kiruv who unfortunately cross those red lines of being Makarif men to women or women to men in a way that is not Tsanua? Right? That it happens in history? Couldn't you say, and kings are, that is what royalty is, right? Look at David and Bathsheba and Yehuda and Tamar. Royalty comes in such ways that are not 100% tsanua. So couldn't you see Esav fooling himself, or at least fooling his father, to think that his motives were pure? I just want to make care of these poor women. So it's not 100% tsanua what I'm doing. But he wasn't seducing married women. He was seducing women engaged away from idolatry. But he was makar of them in a very shady way. And serving idolatry, couldn't you see Esav fooling himself or his father and saying, look, I don't really want to serve idolatry, but eventually I'm going to have to infiltrate these places and destroy them. The best thing to do is to be a double agent. Go in, let them think I'm on their side, infiltrate the Avodah Zarah, make them think that I'm with them, and that way later I can destroy them. And that's
all
happened
in one day he did that?
Yeah, all in one day. He had wedged with the day into two different parts.
It's not a good
okay. In any case, so therefore, it's possible that if you don't know the motive, to give him the benefit of the doubt, it's a mitzvah, to give the benefit of the doubt when you don't know, that maybe all of these three things, right, were done with the right motive, and therefore he's not a Russia, he's just like a king. He just hasn't yet honed in how to do it properly. On the other hand, Rivka and Yitzchak never saw fakers. So he wasn't familiar with the phenomenon of people being able to be fakers, to totally be deceptive. So he gave Esav the benefit of the doubt that he probably is doing these things with good motives. But Rivka grew up amongst people who were deceptive, against fakers. That's her brother, her father. Avraham Avinu also grew up amongst people who were Rishayim, who were fakers and deceivers. So he could smell, and she could smell one a mile away. You only have to give somebody the benefit of the doubt if there's a doubt. But if you're sure, she could smell this deception. Esav is not a tzaddik with good motives. He's definitely bad motives. And Avraham would have seen that. Therefore he had to die. And that's why Rivka knew who he was. Now, so that's the case. Why didn't she go and tell? And that's why, why didn't she go and tell Yitzchak, you're making a mistake. Esav's a Russia. He's not the Melech. He's done these terrible sins. He's using his character traits not in a positive way, but in a negative way. And therefore, he's not at all part of the Jewish people. He's invalidated. And everything's going to come from Yaakov. Don't give him the bracha. Says Rosham Shafal Hirsch. Yitzchak would have believed her. And he wouldn't have given Esav the bracha. But he was so set on his heart of giving Esav, the king, these brachas, he wouldn't have given Yaakov the brachas, because Yaakov is the Navi. He's the Kohen. What's he going to do with these brachas? He would have already would have given the bracha without a full heart, and it wouldn't have been an effective bracha. So therefore Rivka said, I'm going to have to send in Yaakov and prove to Yitzchak that when necessary, Yaakov can act like Esav has to as a king, and he can fool you into thinking he's Esav. And then he'll give him the bracha with a full heart, even knowing it's Yaakov. Because then he'll know that only one of these children, everything's going to come from him. The Kahuna, the Malchus, the Nevi'ah, and he's going to have to use the various character traits, suppress them when necessary, and use them when necessary. And if he can show Yitzchak that he can fool him to think he's Esav, that means he has the qualities of Esav too, that he could be a Melech. And that's why Yitzchak said, Hakol Kol Yaakov, I see one person with both qualities. He has the voice, the spiritual qualities of Yaakov, and the physical qualities of Esav. The hands are like Esav. And that's why he gave him the bracha, because he realized that one of these is going to have to do both roles, and the other one probably is invalidated, and
so
therefore.
Didn't realize it was Yaakov.
What?
So he did realize it was Yaakov.
Right. According to this, he did realize. He didn't know maybe it was Yaakov, but he knew it was one of them with both qualities. And then what's it called? When Esav came in, and he saw that Gehenna was open in front of him, he realized that Esav was the one who was invalidated. And the one who came before was Yaakov with both qualities. So this is the bottom line, the thrust of this parsha, to teach us that no character trait is good or bad. You can have one character or a different character, and depends how you what's it called, how you use them. Both Yaakov and Esav could have been both tzaddikim and both the Jewish people. They could have both rishayim and both invalidated. One could have been a tzaddik and one a rasha, and that's what happened in the end. And that was their free choice. And therefore Yaakov was the one who built the Jewish people, and Esav was pushed away and became another nation, who was an adversary of the Jewish people. In fact, just to end, it says that Rasham Shafal Hirsch says that there was a critique. It says 2:13, nobody noticed the difference. And we said, it doesn't mean they didn't notice the difference. It wasn't a big deal. They're different children. The Medrash says they both went to school, they both came home from school. Says of Sham Shmuel Hirsch, that's a critique of Yitzchak and Rivka. How could you send two so different children to the same school? A school that's good for an Esav can't be good for a Yaakov. And a school that's good for Yaakov can't be good for Esav. Esav needs a field school, out in the wild, and what's it called, hands-on, not sitting in four walls and going crazy because he's a physical, a person, very aggressive, outgoing, physical, inclined person. On the other hand, Yaakov is going to be out in the field, right, in a field school, is going to go crazy because he's more inclined to be more passive and more spiritual or whatever. So they should have taken notice of the differences in the children and sent them to schools that fit their character. But they didn't. They sent them to the same school. And therefore, maybe that's the reason why Esav didn't develop his character in a positive way, only in a negative way. That's what the Sham Shafal Hirsch says. Ramosha Feinstein says that difficult to say such a thing, to criticize the Ovos, where the Medrash doesn't sound like it's a criticism. But in any case, Sham Shafal Hirsch has broad, short shoulders, and I didn't say it, he said it, so I'm telling you what he said. In any case, so that is Nirtz Hashem. Therefore, if we are merit, then the day will come when we will totally overpower Esav, and once again make him use his qualities in service of the Ribbono Shel Olam, right? V'olu Moshiim b'Hartzion lishpot es HaEsav, v'hoysel Hashem HaMelucha, and then all the nations of the world, Molo Arz Deyes Hashem, Kayam liyam, Kayam Pamayim liyam Mechasim, and then all the nations of the world, v'afachti lohem sofa brura likro kulam b'shem Hashem, all the nations of the world will have a clear voice to call out in the name of God, u'la'avdo Shemechon, and to serve Him shoulder to shoulder together with the Jewish people, as was supposed to be, right? And even though Esav was pushed away from the Jewish people, but the mice in the end will be able to work together with us in service of the Ribbono Shel Olam. Any questions? Yeah.
Is it a person at an objective level of tzidkos, or it's like each person in their in their own way, but they're making the best moral choices they can.
Right. Tzaddik, there are definitely parameters of what's right and what's wrong, but there are latitudes of things that are not specific of using your qualities in a positive way, then you're a tzaddik. If you use them in a negative way, you're a rasha. Or not a tzaddik, or whatever. It's all gradations.
So a tzaddik could be a person who's not necessarily the highest levels of tzikus, but...
Right. He's using his right. Right. Mm-hmm. Either, in other words, there's tzaddikim that are tzaddikim in absolute form, and then there's relative tzaddikim. Mm-hmm. So you can be a relative tzaddik as long as you're doing what's proper. You can be an absolute tzaddik when you're really somebody special.